Welcome to Face Connecticut, an in-depth look at today's issues.
Good morning and welcome to another edition of Face Connecticut on WTIC News Talk 1080, 96.5 TICFM, and Light 100.5 WRCH. Aaron Kupek with you this Sunday morning. Happy Mother's Day. And we are pleased to be joined by Eric Hammerling, Executive Director of the Connecticut Forest and Park Association. Good morning to you, sir.
Good morning to you and happy Mother's Day for everyone.
Well, certainly state parks and forests and trails have been useful for a lot of people during the pandemic. How are they all holding up considering how loved they have been over the past year plus?
It really is amazing. There's actually been some work done by UConn's Connecticut Trail Census to try to chart how much use there has been of the trails. And looking statewide, you know, they've estimated it's almost a 40% increase in trail use in 2020 compared to 2019. And we certainly see that continuing this spring. DEEP has said that at many of the state parks and forests, they've seen a 10 to 20% increase in attendance and a 50% increase in people who are using trails. So we think that's very exciting. That's what they're for. These are public resources that we know people cherish. There are so many wonderful places to go around the state, and we're glad people are getting out to them. I should just say that there's an estimated 3,000 miles of trails in Connecticut, even more than 3,000 miles of trails. So there is space for people to enjoy them safely, and we hope people will take advantage of that.
This must come with some wear and tear, though.
Oh, for sure. And there, unfortunately, the other side of lots of people getting out to trails and perhaps a number of people getting out to trails for the first time and not necessarily knowing, how to take care of things like their own garbage or, we have unfortunately seen, in addition to some more trash, there has been more graffiti and damage of certain facilities that has just come with a lot of extra use, as you might imagine, for the state as it's trying to keep state parks and forests and wildlife management areas clean and safe for the public. They have been under a lot of pressure. They've had to spend money on things like, PPE to keep their workers safe and to keep the public safe as well. So we would definitely encourage people as they're getting outdoors to be thinking about some basic things like, if they bring any things to parks, forests, trails, to make sure to bring them out with them. We're both encouraged when we see people walking along trails with a bag to pick up some extra, garbage along the way, but also frustrated at the same time that they have to do that. So we think a little bit of etiquette goes a long way and means many more people will have an enjoyable experience outdoors.
How big an issue is discarded PPE along trails and in parks?
Yeah, unfortunately, I've seen that in a lot of places. And I guess it's a mixed blessing. That probably means that at least for a certain amount of time, people were wearing their PPE to keep others and themselves safe. But obviously, when you have disposable PPE, you want to make sure to take that with you, discard of it at home or in a garbage appropriately, and not drop it alongside a trail. It's not really a wonderful thing for other people to stumble upon. And of course, because people are also just extra sensitive about, health and potential disease vectors, no one really wants to pick up someone else's mask. So we would encourage people to take care of their own.
Certainly, we're able to do more things in more places than we were, say, a year ago. Do you see interest in parks and forests and trails subsiding at all with people having more options than they did at the onset of the pandemic?
I don't. And in fact, I've seen quite the opposite. I've heard many stories from many people who said, Eric, we were not really big trails people before the pandemic, but we have been getting outdoors as a way to, for physical health, for mental health, for connecting to nature, for reducing stress and anxiety. And we've gotten hooked. We are now trail users. We are getting out there. We feel better than we've ever felt before. And I've got to say, I it's important to recognize that Connecticut is one of the states that was, I'd say, really wise in never closing access to the outdoors during the pandemic, and knowing that even though use might be restricted somewhat, having smaller parking areas, encouraging people to recreate in smaller groups, they never closed the outdoors to the public. And that meant that people were really, when there was nothing to do indoors, there were always lots of things to do outdoors, and people have responded in a big way. I expect that to not only continue, but maybe even increase, because people increase their comfort and know what a wonderful way it is to enjoy themselves. So, I think we're going to have a big year this year as well.
Now, with so many new users, talk a little about trail etiquette and how things have changed during the pandemic. Say you're hiking on a Blue Blaze Trail someplace in Connecticut, and you encounter someone coming in the other direction, or you're going more slowly than someone behind you and they want to pass. How does that work?
Well, I would say always be aware of your surroundings and whether or not you are with a group of people. You should try to just be cognizant of the fact that there are other people using that trail who might be coming the other direction, might be coming, quickly up behind you. And you should just, if you're not with other people and are able to be distanced to people, you can, remove or let down your mask or your gaiter. But I would certainly say keep it in some proximity, because, even though there has been a lot more information coming out about the relative safety of even not being masked outdoors, that is when you can be distanced from others. And when you have people passing you on the trail, I would always encourage people to, be the one first to step aside, let someone else pass you at a safe distance. I have, and several people do, bring a walking stick with them from time to time. If you have a walking stick that's about 4 feet to 5 feet long, that will give you a good sense of, what 6 feet actually looks like. And I'm not suggesting that anyone should be waving their walking stick around to tell people to go, beyond that distance, but, just to be safe and courteous. And of course, that being safe and courteous with regard to the pandemic extends to what I was mentioning before, which is, be safe and courteous too when it comes to, how you are taking, garbage with you rather than dropping it along the trail. You certainly also want to take those other basic precautions that you would take if you are hiking, especially if you're going hiking by yourself. You want to have a phone with you that is charged. You want to let people know that you are going on a walk. You want to take any precautions that you may have to take to make sure that you don't get dehydrated, that you are safe from, bugs and ticks. So you want to do your tick checks. I mean, there are all those things that are important to keep in mind if you want the outdoor experience to be, as safe as it can be. And then I would say just go do it, explore, find some new places to go. And wherever you go, though, be courteous of others.
A lot of people have welcomed a new dog into the family during the pandemic. What advice do you have for hiking with your dog?
I would say, the real, this is a hard one, because I know how tempting it is to let your dog off leash, especially if you have a very well-trained pet. But the thing to keep in mind is that, other people who might be using the trail don't know that your pet is well-trained, do not know that your pet is not a dangerous, animal. And we have certainly heard from a number of people who are concerned when a dog that they don't know comes running up. You don't know, is it being friendly? Is it in attack mode? So I would definitely encourage people to keep their pets on leash, or go to a place where it's very clearly allowed for pets to be off leash. You know, often at a trailhead, there will be some rules for, you know, this is either a walking only trail or allows biking or equestrian use or other uses. Really pay attention to what is allowed where you are, and that will help everyone have a great time.
Okay. And now your group is... you have a lot of volunteers who help to maintain trails. Are you looking for more volunteers?
Thanks for asking that, Aaron. Absolutely. Since 1929, that's when the Blue Blazed Hiking Trail system began. And since that time, it's primarily volunteers who help to maintain it. So if you walk around on various Blue Blazed Hiking Trails, don't think that it's, the state or someone from the government that's necessarily taking care of that. In most situations, it's volunteers like we all are, who are taking some time to go out and make sure that the blazes on the trees so that people don't get lost are painted, that the walkway is as, open as possible, and that places are well tended to. We're always looking for additional volunteers. And if you went to the website of the Connecticut Forest and Parks Association, which is ctwoodlands.org, you would see, if you're interested in volunteering, there's a button there for how to volunteer. You'll see what various events are happening around the year and how you might be able to pitch in and help. So thanks for raising it. We are a volunteer-based organization, though we have a small staff, small professional staff. Without volunteers, we really couldn't accomplish half of what we do.
You are listening to Face Connecticut. We are talking to Eric Hammerling, Executive Director of the Connecticut Forest and Park Association. The association is also involved in legislative advocacy. What are you watching in the General Assembly this year?
Well, one of the things we want to make sure of is that the Passport to the Parks program is protected. Fortunately, in both the budget put forward by the governor and the budget put forward by the General Assembly, the passport funding stays intact. Why is that so important? Well, we all contribute to the Passport to the Parks. It's a $5 fee on our vehicle registration that we pay for, each vehicle, $5 per year. That $5 per year goes directly towards paying for the operations and maintenance of our state parks. And there have been some proposals periodically in the legislature that would either exempt certain users or otherwise divert funding from the Passport to the Parks. And there was a proposal earlier this year, actually, that we expected was probably going to result in a loss of almost 50%, half of the funding available for maintaining state parks. That would have been a disaster. We would have seen state parks being closed or mothballed or, gates up and you can help yourself. Without any tending to those places, we would have seen state campgrounds also be closed because they're also maintained by the folks who are supported by the Passport to the Parks. None of that would have been good, and I'm so glad that the proposal in the legislature was defeated. But I am very aware, keenly aware, that the legislative session goes until Wednesday, June 9th at midnight. I have been there in past years at 11:59, hoping that certain things would be passed, hoping that other things would not be passed. And I do expect that to protect the passport will take a full court effort once again. And of course, we're fully willing to fight that battle. But we also want to make sure that folks know how important those funds are to protecting the parks, but also a great benefit that the public gets from the passport to the parks is that when you go to a state park, you no longer have to pay an entrance fee at the gate. Just a few years ago, before the passport, if you were going to go on a weekend to a place like Hammonasset or Rocky Neck or one of the shoreline parks, it would cost you $13 for just one visit. So, you know, compared to that, you have a $5 fee that gets you into all state parks without paying anything at the gate. It's a bargain, and it's critical to make sure that we have parks in our state. So that I would say is at the very top of the list, Aaron. We're also trying to make sure that there is funding in place for, outdoor recreation priorities like bonding for the state's recreational trails and greenways program, which is a couple years out of date with being funded, for open space and other climate-related priorities. So there's no shortage of fun at the Capitol, but it has been an odd place to try to do work because they have been closed to the public. Everything's been remote, and it's that much more challenging from the perspective of an advocate, and it's that much more critical that people who are interested in as volunteers or supporters would like to weigh in with their legislators. We encourage people to be active because that's the only way to ensure your voice is heard.
I know it has been an issue in some other states, but do ATV riders and hikers in Connecticut generally coexist peacefully?
That's a good question. I would say, if you're talking about on state lands, ATVs are specifically not allowed on state lands. So, whether or not they coexist, there shouldn't be ATV use on state lands. But if you're talking about on private lands where there are private landowners who allow ATV use on their properties, and there are walking trails that or other types of trails that perhaps aren't best used by ATVs, you might have ATVs and other trails on the same property, but just not on the same track. And in that kind of instance, they can coexist. But it's a difficult issue because, ATVs, because they're not allowed, during this past year, when a lot of folks had more time on their hands, we did also see some, I'd say an increase in illegal ATV use in places where they shouldn't be. And ATVs are maybe fun, but they also can be dangerous, and we want to make sure that ATV users are using them safely and in appropriate places.
Now, in terms of events you have coming up, Connecticut Trails Day is back next month, June 5th and 6th. Tell us what's happening this year after things were kind of curtailed last year because of COVID.
Absolutely. Yeah, Connecticut Trails Day is something we've been looking to every year since 1993. It's the first weekend in June every year. And in Connecticut, we've actually celebrated more Trails Day events than any other state in the nation that first weekend in June. And it's been that way every year. So we've got something amazing that's happening here. This year, we'll have over 170 events taking place all around the state on June 5th and 6th. There is a directory of all of the events on the CFPA website at ctwoodlands.org. There are certain limitations that we're imposing this year just because of trying to be as COVID safe as we can be. But because they're outdoor events, they are being held in person this year with limited numbers and with masks when people are in close proximity. Last year we had to, because of COVID, make it a do-it-yourself event where we basically created some videos and said, here are some places where you can go to enjoy yourself, but to go on your own to do it. This year, we'll again have people leading the events who are very familiar with the very with all of the places around the state where events are taking place. And that's a great way to get introduced to a new place, to learn about it from someone who knows it really well, and to have a great time.
Yeah, talk to me about the new places, because I think a lot of people turn to some of the classics, if you will, for hiking. I'm thinking about Sleeping Giant, thinking about Hubline Tower. Are people discovering new places to recreate outside during the pandemic?
I certainly hope they are, because those popular places, especially over the last year, as Deep was trying to make sure that they kept places open, but kept them open safely, they would reduce, for example, at a place like Sleeping Giant or Talcott Mountain, the parking in some instances by half. What that meant was that those places filled up really quickly. And if you didn't have an idea for somewhere else to go, you might get really frustrated. But we did find that people were, using resources like the interactive trails map that we have on the CFPA website. There should be a CT Trails Finder map coming out later this year that UConn is going to be working on. There are resources. Also, if you went to a shoreline beach and found that it was also closed because there are so many people who got there early, they offered some alternatives. So if people are looking for places to go, I would definitely encourage you on the times that you know it's going to be busy, on the weekend, at the most popular parks, have a few other places in mind where you might go as a second, third, or fourth option. You'll get to enjoy more places, make sure that you're not going to have all of your eggs in one basket.
The old adage says they're not making new land anymore. Does Connecticut continue to add open space and land for passive recreation?
It does, though I would certainly say the pace at which we are adding land for outdoor recreation is not as fast as it could be or should be. We actually have a statewide goal that was set by the legislature in, I believe, 1999, which was that we would protect 21% of Connecticut as open space by the year 2023. Well, that year is coming up rapidly. We've basically succeeded in about 75% of that goal. I don't think we're going to hit that goal in the next 2 years unless we dramatically increase the pace at which we're protecting land. I would like to see us do that as a state, and I want to make sure, and now we're seeing at the federal level, talk about 30% of states being protected for open space. I think that's a great goal that we should be thinking about in Connecticut as well.
Eric, one more time, if people want to learn more about the Connecticut Forest and Park Association, how can they do that?
I think the best place to start is with our website, which is www.ctwoodlands.org. And there's lots of information about our public policy, our trails, our land conservation, our education work that's happening all around the state. So we'd encourage people to learn more, get involved, support CFPA, and have a great summer.
He is Eric Hammerling, Executive Director of the Connecticut Forest and Park Association. Thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Glad to be with you, Aaron. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Face Connecticut. I'm Aaron Kupek. Enjoy the balance of your weekend.
Face Connecticut is a production of the News and Public Affairs Department of WTIC Radio.